Today we will pick up where we left off last year. So I think we came to the end of the section on karma last year. And so today we'll study the section called The Process of Death and Rebirth. First, the author mentions the four causes of death. And these four causes are: one, the expiration of the lifespan, and two, the expiration of the productive karmic force, and three, the simultaneous expiration of lifespan and the productive karmic force, and four, the intervention of a destructive karma. So these are the four causes of death. These four causes of death are explained with the simile of an oil lamp. So imagine or visualize an oil lamp burning. So it will be burning so long as there is the wick, there is oil, and there is no gust of wind, or there is no deliberate extinguishing by a person. But when the wick is used up, the flame will go out. Or when the oil is used up, the flame will go out. And when both are used up, again, the flame will go out. And even though there is oil, there is wick, but when there is a gust of wind or somebody extinguishes it, then the flame will go out. So in the same way, the expiration of lifespan is like the expiration of the wick, and expiration of the productive karmic forces like expiration of the oil, and the expiration of both is again like the expiration of both, and the last one the flame going out because of the gust of wind or somebody deliberately extinguishes is like a destructive karma. So there are these four kinds of death. And death in Buddhism is defined as the interruption of life faculty included in the limits of one becoming or one existence. So jivitendriya or life faculty is important. And when it expires, a person is said to die. So when a person dies, both mental faculty and physical faculty disappear. So with the cessation of the mental and physical life faculty, one is said to die. So that is just the interruption or cutting off of that life faculty. Now the first kind of death, which comes through the expiration of, through the expiration of lifespan. Now, as you know, there are some realms that have fixed lifespan, like Chatu Maharajika, Tao Dingsa, and so on. But for human beings, there is no fixed lifespan, but nowadays it is supposed, the lifespan of human beings is supposed to be about 100 years. So if a person dies, say, when he reaches 100 years, although his karmic force is still unexhausted, then he may be said to die through the expiration of lifespan. His past karma may have potential to give him a longer life, but since he was born at a time when human beings live only 100 years and he dies at the age of 100 years, then he is said to die through the expiration of lifespan. And for celestial beings and so on, their lifespan is longer than that of human beings. And when they die at the end of their lifespan, say for example for Chatu Maharajikas, if they die at the end of 500 celestial years, then they are said to die through the expiration of lifespan. And then in the manual there is a saying, if the productive karma is still not exhausted when death takes place through reaching the maximum age, the karmic force can generate another rebirth on the same plane or on some higher plane, as in the case of the devas. I don't know where he took this from. So I have no way of saying whether it is right or wrong. Maybe he took it from the commentary of Lady Sierra. I don't have that book, and so I cannot say whether it is true or not. But according to my understanding, ikama can give only one patisandhi. One karma can give only one patisandhi. So even though it is not exhausted, I don't think it can give another another bodhisandhi result. Okay, the second one is the expiration of the productive karmic force. Now this is death before the end of a normal given lifespan. For example, human beings are said to, or supposed to live 100 years now. If a person dies before 100 years, then he is said to die of the expiration of productive karmic force. So his karma in the past cannot help him to live up to 100 years. So he dies before he reaches 100 year. So in that case, he is said to die from expiration of the productive karmic force. So when a person dies through productive karmic force, his lifespan may not be exhausted, and also there are other favorable conditions for the prolongation of life. Although there are these conditions, and although lifespan is not exhausted, his karmic force is exhausted. And so he dies before he reaches the end of the lifespan. So that is the expiration and death through the expiration of the productive karmic force. When both the lifespan and karmic force simultaneously come to an end, this is death by the expiration of both. That means a human being now dies at the age of 100, then he is said to die through expiration of both lifespan and his karmic force. And the fourth kind of death is through a destructive karma. A destructive karma can be the past karma or done in the present life. Destructive karma intervenes when, say, a person is killed by his own attempt or by attempt of others, or if he is killed by some disease. And also, in the case of some persons who committed a very heinous offense against those who are very virtuous, then their karmic force cannot maintain their life or cannot prolong their life up to the end of the lifespan or up to the end of the karmic force. And so their life is cut off, say, before they reach to their normal end. And so that kind of death is called death through the intervention of a destructive karma. So death through a destructive karma can be caused by the karma in the past. I think you have met, you still remember the destructive karma when you study the four sets of four kinds of karmas. So when a person dies through a destructive karma, that destructive karma can be that can belong to the past, or it can be in this life. You know, there is a story of a king who cuts the hands and feet of a hermit who was a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva in that life was called Kantiwadi because he practiced forbearance or he practiced patience. So the king was displeased with him, and so the king wanted to test him whether he had real patience, and so he ordered the hermit's hands to be cut off and then his legs to be cut off. But although these were cut off, he did not get angry. But this crime, this sin was so grave that the king was swallowed by the earth. So the king's cutting the hands and feet, the legs of the hermit was so grave, so bad that it interferes or it destroys the force of karma, force of his past karma, and so that force cannot maintain him and maintain his life any longer, and so he was swallowed by the earth and died and born in avijja hell. So that kind of death is called death through destructive karma. So there are many kinds of death through destructive karmas nowadays, dying in an accident or committing suicide and the other natural calamities as well. So there are these four kinds of death taught in Buddhism, and among them the first three are called kala marana, timely death. That means a person dies when it is time for him to die. But the last one is called akala marana, untimely death. There is still lifespan, and there is still the force of productive karma, but it is cut off through a destructive karma. So it is called akala marana, an untimely death. It is like the flame of an oil lamp going out when there is a gust of wind. So these are the four kinds of death. Now the author explains what signs come to the mind of a person at the time of death. Now, in the case of those who are about to die, at the time of death, one of the following presents itself through any of the six sense doors. Now, when a person is about to die, then one of the three kinds of objects present itself to his mind through any one of the six sense doors, through eye, through ear, and so on. And that presentation of the object itself is caused by the force of karma. So it the object appears to the mind of a dying person by the force of karma he did in the past. That karma may be either kusala karma or akusala karma. And the three kinds of objects that appears to his mind at that time are, one, karma, and two, the sign of karma, and three, the sign of destiny. So any one of these present itself to the mind of a dying person. Karma is that karma is the karma that is productive of rebirth. So the karma here is productive karma that gives patisandhi result in the next existence. And the sign of karma means some objects that are apprehended previously at the time of the performing karma. That means the main object at the time of the performing of that karma, and also something that was instrumental in performing that karma. That means, let us call them secondary objects. So there are two kinds of sign of karma. The primary and the secondary, or the main and the secondary. Now, let us say, when the sign of karma is donating a monastery, let us say, then the monastery is the main object, and the furniture or something that are used at the monastery, and also giving alms and robes and so on at the monastery are called instrumental in performing the karma. So there are two kinds of sign of karma. And if it is, say, erecting a pagoda, then the pagoda is the main object, and the flowers and others, Buddha statues and so on, they are the secondary objects. So similarly, when it is an akusala act, and let's say killing an animal, then the animal is the main object, and the weapons used in killing are called instrumental, or they are secondary objects. So in every sign of karma, there can be these two kinds, two varieties, the main and the secondary. So in the text, that had been apprehended previously at the time of performing the karma refers to the main object, and something that was instrumental in performing the karma refers to the secondary objects. Three is a sign of destiny. That is a sign of the state to be obtained and to be experienced in the immediately following existence. So immediately following existence is called destiny here. So that the sign of destiny means the sign of that immediately following existence. And there are, again, two varieties of sign of destiny. The one to be obtained and the one to be experienced. Now that means if a person is going to be reborn as a human being, the sign of destiny to be obtained is the wall of his mother's womb. And the sign to be experienced is his experience in the life of a human being. So if he's going to be reborn in a celestial state, then the celestial realm is the state to be obtained, and the celestial mansions, celestial nymphs and trees and others are those that are experienced. And if a person is going to be reborn in hell, then the hell is the state to be obtained, and hellfire and those who do torture to the inhabitants of hell are called the sign to be experienced in that existence or in that hell. So here also a sign of destiny is of two kinds. One is the main, and the other is also secondary. So the main is the existence of the realm where a dying person is to be reborn. And the secondary ones are those that he will experience in that life. So these signs, these three kinds of objects, actually one of these three kinds of objects present itself to the mind of a dying person. Now, in the manual, say guide to paragraph 35, second sentence, it should be stressed that this object presents itself to the jhavana process of the dying person, not to the death consciousness itself. So it is important. The death consciousness, the final chitta in a lifetime, apprehends the same object grasped by the rebirth consciousness and bhavanga of the existence that is about to end. So these three kinds of objects present themselves to the jhavana process and not to the death consciousness. The object of the last jhavana process then serves as the object of the rebirth consciousness and bhavanga in the next existence, and becomes in turn the object of death consciousness at the end of that existence. Now, it is important that, because if we do not understand this, we might say that the object of Patisandhi, Bhavanga and Chudi are all same in all lives. So the karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny in one life will be the object of Patisandhi, Bhavanga and Chudi in other lives as well, and that is not correct. So here, as you know, in one life, Patisandhi, Bhavanga and Chuti have the same object, same identical object. Now, when we look at the diagram, it will be clearer. So, the object presented to is not to the death consciousness, but to the jhana process. In other words, these objects are taken as object by the jhana process, and not by chuti cheta, not by death consciousness. Okay, now, so a person who is dying, to the mind of a person who is dying, any one of these objects presents itself. So when they appear to the mind of the dying person, they would appear through any one of the six sense doors. And they appear to the mind of the dying person through the force of the karma he did in the past. In the past mean in this life or in the past lives. Okay. Now, next paragraph. Thereafter, attending to that very object thus presented, the stream of consciousness continually flows, inclining mostly towards that state. Now, thereafter, attending to that very object thus presented, now taking that object as object, taking the karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny as object, the stream of consciousness continually flows, go on and on and on, inclining mostly towards that state. That means inclining mostly towards the state he is going to be reborn in. Now, it says mostly because when people die suddenly, they may not have time to incline to the state. So the word mostly is inserted here. Now, if you kill a fly, say, by hitting it, it may not have time, say, to incline towards the existence it is going to be reborn in, and there can be no the continuity of consciousness or corrupted continuity of consciousness at that time, because it is just killed instantly. So for those beings, the inclining towards the state to be born in, and also the mind to be pure or to be corrupted, cannot happen. So the word mostly is put here. Now, that stream of consciousness is in accordance with the karma that is to be matured, whether pure or corrupted. So his stream of consciousness will be pure if the kusala karma is to give result. And if his stream of consciousness will be corrupted if akusala karma is to give results. So according to the karma which will give results, his consciousness, his stream of consciousness is pure or corrupted. And in conformity with the state in which one is to be reborn. So when a person is going to be reborn in the human realm, then his mind will be inclined towards that human realm. If he's going to be reborn in a celestial realm, then his mind will be inclined towards celestial realm. It is like your mind inclined towards a place where you are going to. Say you are preparing, packing things up to go to some place. So at that time, your mind is inclined towards that place. So in the same way, since the being is about to die, then his mind will be inclined towards that that state. Now, attending to that very object thus presented, this is a general statement. For most people, their mind will take the object thus presented. That is, their mind will take the object that is presented, whether it is karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny. But sometimes we can do something to change that presentation of objects. I have repeatedly told you about a man who had been a hunter, and in his old age, his son, who was an arahant, ordained him, and he became a monk. When he was lying on his deathbed, he saw dogs running after him or surrounding him. So at that time, he was frightened, and he said aloud, get them away, or something like that. When the son heard this, he knew that the signs of Nirya, the signs of hell, had occurred to his father. So he had his novices bring flowers, and then he put the flowers on the terrace of the pagoda, and then he had his father taken to the pagoda, and then told him, "Now, these flowers are for you to offer to the Buddha. So do you offer to the Buddha and get your mind clear, or get your mind settled." So when he offered flowers to the Buddha, those signs changed. So instead of those signs of dogs running after him disappeared, and instead he saw celestial nymphs. So when he saw celestial nymphs, he said to his son, "Go away, go away." So the son said, "Why?" He said, "No, your mothers are coming." So with that mind, he died, and so he was reborn as a celestial being. So first, the object presented was the sign of destiny of hell. But his son was an arahant, and he knew what to do. So he tried, and he succeeded in changing that sign of destiny from a sign of hell to a sign of celestial realm. So attending to that very object thus presented is a general statement. So in some cases, he may attend to the object produced by his relatives or say whoever happens to be near him. Or that rebirth productive karma presents itself to a sense door in the way of renewing. Now there are two kinds of presentation of these objects. Now, the first kind of presentation of objects is caused by has to do with some karma he did in the past. Now, this second kind of presentation, that rebirth productive karma presents itself to a sense door in the way of renewing, is the karma appears to him as though he were doing it at the time. So renewing means it becomes new again, and he feels as though he were doing that karma at that very moment. That karma may have been done years ago or even lives ago, but that karma which is going to give patisandhi result becomes so powerful that in his mind he feels that he is doing that karma again. So in the note it is said that the karma presenting itself does not appear as a memory image of something that was previously done, but it appears to the mind or as if it were being done at that very moment. So he feels as though he were doing that karma again at that very moment. So in that case, it can be, it is a karma which he experiences again at that time. So therefore, the presentation of the objects is two kinds. The first is just he remembers some his karma or a sign of karma and sign of destiny appears to him. And the second one is he feels as though he were doing that karma at that moment. Now, death and rebirth linking. Now, up to this passage, the person has not yet died. The person has not yet reached the last thought process. So to one who is on the verge of death, either at the end of a cognitive process, that means vitichitta, or at the dissolution of the life continuum, the death consciousness, the consummation of the present life, arises and ceases in the way of death. So this is how death occurs. To one who is on the verge of death, who is near his death, either at the end of a cognitive process, that means either at the end of jhavana or tadaramana, death consciousness will arise. Or at the dissolution of life continuum, that means or after bhavanga. So, you can find out, at least there can be four kinds of death thought processes. Actually, there are many. But from here, from this statement, you can get four kinds of death thought processes. The first one is at the end of jhavana, right? Death at the end of jhavana. Death at the end of tadaramana. That is second. And the third is death at the end of jhavana and bhavanga. And the fourth is death at the end of tadaramana and bhavanga. So there can be four kinds of thought processes, death thought processes. And there are many more. So death may arise at the end of or after the jhavanas or after the tadaramana or after bhavanga. And that death consciousness is the last consciousness in that present life. So it is a consummation of the present life, arises and ceases in the way of death. That means by way of death. So according to this teaching, death means arising and disappearance of the last consciousness in one life. Immediately after that death consciousness has ceased, a rebirth linking consciousness arises and is established in the subsequent existence. Immediately after that death consciousness has ceased, here, immediately after that, by these words, immediately after death, the other wanted to prevent the opinion that there is a interim life between two lives. It is called antara bhava in Pali. Now, in Theravada Buddhism, antara bhava is not accepted. But in other schools of Buddhism, antara bhava is accepted. So here, since the other belongs to Theravada Buddhism, he wants to prevent that from taken true. So immediately after that, death consciousness, rebirth consciousness arises. So there is no time gap between death in one life and rebirth in the next life. Now, there may be practical experiences of a person being in something like an interim life. According to Theravada Buddhism, that is just one life. That is not an interim period between one life and another. That what is called interim period itself is one life. So, for example, a person dies, and then he may be reborn as a ghost. And he may be living as a ghost for 7 days or whatever, and then he dies as a ghost and reborn as a human being. Now, Theravada Buddhism takes that life as a ghost is just one existence, one bhava. It is not an interim period between one life and another. But according to the other schools of Buddhism, that period is said to be just an interim period. So they don't call it a life. Although the word bhava is used, say antara bhava. Antara means in between. So life in between. So immediately after, by the words, immediately after that, the other discarded the opinion that there is interim period between one life and another. So according to the teachings of Theravada Abhidhamma, death is immediately followed by rebirth consciousness. And as soon as rebirth consciousness arises, he is in a new life. So, a rebirth linking consciousness arises and is established in the subsequent existence. As soon as the rebirth consciousness arises, he is already in a new life. Not that rebirth consciousness arises before the new life, and then when the new life appears, rebirth consciousness has reached its static stage or dissolution stage. So rebirth consciousness arises immediately after the expiration of death consciousness. And that rebirth consciousness, apprehending the object thus obtained, that means taking the object which was taken by the thought moments before death moment, either supported by the heart base, that means if he is reborn in the Kama Vajra or Rupa Vajra realms, then his rebirth consciousness will have the heart base. And if he is to be reborn in an Arupa Vajra realm, then his rebirth consciousness is baseless. It has no base. So either supported by a hard base or baseless. And it is generated by a volitional formation that is enveloped by latent ignorance and rooted in latent craving as is appropriate. Now, (clears throat) I hope you have the picture or diagram in your mind, or you can look up at the diagram. So there is death consciousness and there is rebirth consciousness. Now that rebirth consciousness is generated by a volitional formation. Volitional formation means just karma. So it is generated by karma. That is enveloped by latent ignorance and rooted in latent craving. Now, in beings, in the mind of beings, ignorance or avidya, moha, and craving, tanha, is always latent. We do not have tanha at this moment, but it is latent in our minds, and so when there is something desirable, we may have tanha for that thing. So there is always ignorance and craving latent in our minds. Now, if the karma is a kusala karma, how do you explain ignorance and craving? Enveloped by ignorance and rooted in latent craving. Actually, if it is kusala karma, it is not associated with, although it is not associated with ignorance and craving, since ignorance and craving are latent, it is said to be enveloped by latent ignorance and rooted in latent craving. So here, with regard to kusala karma, their relationship is not association, not sampayoda, but decisive support, upanisaya. So by a kind of condition called decisive upanisaya, kusala karma is supported by ignorance and craving. So that means they do not arise at the same time. But because there is ignorance and craving, there is kusala karma. We do kusala because we have ignorance and we have craving. If we do not have ignorance and craving altogether, we do not acquire kusala, right? Like arahants. Arahants have eradicated all mental defilements, including ignorance and craving. And so whatever they do becomes just doing, just kriya. So they do not acquire kusala. But we have craving and ignorance latent in our minds, and so not really understanding the true nature of things and being desirous of something, say we do kusala. We want to be reborn as a human being. We want to be reborn as celestial beings. And so we do kusala. So when we do kusala and we acquire kusala, that kusala is supported by ignorance and craving by way of decisive support. That means they do not arise together, but because there is ignorance and craving, there is kusala. If it is akusala karma, then we can get both kinds of support. Decisive support as well as association support, association condition. Because when you do an akusala, then ignorance is there and craving is there. That means if it is lobha sahagata, right? If it is dosa sahagata, then ignorance is association as well as decisive support. But craving is only decisive support and not association, because lobha does not arise with dosa mula citta. So we have to take it as is appropriate. That means if it is a kusala karma, then the ignorance and craving support that kusala karma by way of decisive support. And if it is akusala karma, they are conditioned for akusala karma both by way of association and by way of decisive support. So the karma, which is enveloped by latent ignorance and rooted in latent craving, generates or produces the patisanticheta. So patisanticheta is product of karma in the past. And that rebirth linking consciousness, so called because it links together the two consecutive existences, is conjoined with its mental adjuncts. This is nothing new, right? Consciousness is always accompanied by chetasikas. So this consciousness is called relinking consciousness because it links together the two consecutive existences, the old existence and the new existence. So it is called linking, patisanti. And it is associated with mental factors, and acts as the forerunner to the conascent states as their locus of foundation. That means, this is also not new. You know, mind is, consciousness is said to be the forerunner of other mental states. And forerunner does not mean that mind goes in front and the chetasikas follow it, but it is called a forerunner because it looks like a forerunner, because it is chief. The chetasikas can arise only when there is consciousness. So consciousness is like a foundation, a place for chetasikas to arise. Now, in the notes to guide to paragraph 37, the last cognitive process begins when the bhavanga is interrupted, vibrates for one moment, and is then arrested. Now he is describing the process. Thereafter follows either a sense door process, taking an object, some sense object, presenting itself at one of the five sense doors, or a bare mind door process, taking as object either some sense object or a mental object, presenting itself at the mind door. Within this terminal process, the jhavana phase, by reason of its weakness, runs for only five mind moments rather than the usual seven. We'll come to that later also. Now, this process lacks original productive karmic potency, but acts rather as the channel for the past karma that has assumed the rebirth generative function. Now, it is important. Now, you know the death thought process, and there are jhavanas in that death thought process. Now, the question is, which produces patisanticheta? Karma or chetana at the death thought process, or karma in the past? Is it the past karma that produces patisanti, or karma at the moment of five jhavana consciousnesses? Yeah? No, so here it is said, the process lacks original productive karma potency. So, actually, we do not call the chetana associating the five thought moments karma, because it does not, they do not constitute karma, because it is too weak to be productive of patisanti. So they lack the original productive karmic potency, but acts rather as the channel for the past karma that has assumed the rebirth generative function. So they are supporting karma. You know, there are a productive karma and supporting karma, right? And obstructive karma. So the karma in the past is productive karma, And the karma at the moment of death or at the moment of death jhavana process is supportive karma. So they act as just a channel for the past karma to give the result as patisandhi. Following the jhavana stage, two registration chaitas, Dadaramana, may or may not follow. In some cases, the Bhavanga may follow the last process chaitas. Then, as the very last chaita, the death consciousness arises, performing the function of passing away from the present life. With the ceasing of the death consciousness, the life faculty is cut off. So with the cessation of death consciousness, life faculty is also cut off. Then the body remains a mess of inanimate material phenomena born of temperature or uttu, and continues as such until the corpse is reduced to dust. So it is how death occurs. Now, immediately after death consciousness has ceased, now following the dissolution moment of the death consciousness, there arises in a new existence the rebirth linking consciousness, apprehending the object thus obtained in the final jhavana process of the previous life. Apprehending means just taking the same object as was taken by the jhavanas. This chaita is supported by the heart base in realms which include medha, but is baseless in the immaterial realms. It is generally generated by a volitional formation, that is the karma of the previous jhavana process. That means karma in the past, which in turn is grounded in the twin roots of the round of existence, that is latent ignorance and latent craving. So that karma is enveloped by latent ignorance, and that karma is rooted in craving. So we should understand that to mean the ignorance and karma serve as the decisive support and also as association support. The rebirth consciousness is conjoined with its mental adjuncts, that is, the status seekers, which it serves as a forerunner, not in the sense that it precedes them, but in that it acts as their locus of foundation. So, the volitional formation. Now, there are two kinds of volitional formation here. Volitional, let us just call karma here. One that is done in the past, and the other that is at the moment of five jhavanas. Now, the one at the moment of five jhavanas, as we have learned, do not give result or do not generate patisandhi consciousness. But it is said to throw it down on the object. That means it makes the patisandhi chaita takes the object of the jhavanas of the previous thought process. So it helps the patisandhi chaita. It makes the patisandhi chaita to take the object taken by the jhavanas as object. So it is not productive, but it is supportive. Okay, let us go to the thought process. Next paragraph. Herein, in the depth proximate cognitive process, only five feebly occurring jhavanas should be expected. So there are only five jhavanas in the death thought process. Now here, a person is very, very close to death, almost at death. So at that time, his body, his material properties are weak, and so his heart base is also weak, and so his mind is also weak, and so the jhanas do not arise seven times as normal, but they arise only for five times. So only five feebly occurring jhanas should be expected. Therefore, when that takes place, while present objects are occurring, that means while present objects are existing and have entered the avenue of sense, then the rebirth linking and life continuum of the new existence also take a present object. In the case of a sense sphere, rebirth linking, karma vajra patisandhi, when the object is a sign of karma or the sign of destiny perceived at any of the six doors, that object may be present or it may be past. So sign of karma may be present or may be past. Sign of destiny may be present or may be past. But karma as object is only past, because karma is a past karma. It is really past. And it is perceived only through mind door. Now, the sign of karma and sign of destiny may be of six kinds of objects, and so they may be presented through six doors. But karma is past only, and it is presented through mind door only. All these objects of sense sphere rebirth are limited phenomena only. That means karma vajra only. So whether it is karma or it is sign of karma or it is sign of destiny, it is karma vajra object. I hope you remember the objects divided into karma vajra object, mahagata object, and lokutra object, right? So karma vajra chida, jitisika, and rupa are called karma vajra object. And rupa vajra and arupa vajra chidas are called mahagata object, and nibbana is called nibbana object. So the object of the karma vajra patisandhi is karma vajra object. Okay, now let us look at the chart. So this thought process is just one of many death and relinking thought processes. So please do not take it to be the only death thought process. And it is for a man who dies in a karma vajra realm and who is reborn in karma vajra realm. And in this example, the gati nibbida is taken as object. I mean, karma nibbida. Karma nibbida is taken as object. So it can be gati nibbida or it can be karma. But here, say karma nibbida is taken as object. So when death arises, so there is a death thought process, and it begins with past bhavanga, because here the object is present object, so there is bhavanga, and then the past bhavanga, and then vibrating bhavanga, and then arrested bhavanga, and after that what? Panja dwara vajana. So the mind turning towards the object, and then sampadichana, and then sandirana, and then vottapana, determining, and then five jhavanas. And after the fifth jhavana, there is what? Chuti, death consciousness. That is the end of one life. So immediately after death arises relinking or bodhisattva consciousness. And after bodhisattva consciousness, there are 16 or 17 moments of bhavanga. And after the bhavanga, there is another thought process beginning with manodvara vajana, so mental thought process, manodvara vajana, and then 7 moments of jhavana, and then bhavanga again. So this is a thought process of death and rebirth, or how death and rebirth occurs. Now, the... Is there padisandhi?
In the first line?
Yeah. Yes. So, the padisandhi, bhavanga, and then chuti of life one are identical, right? So if the object of padisandhi is kama, then the object of bhavanga through life is kama, and object of death is also kama. Then if the object is kama nimitta, then all kama nimitta, and if it is kati nimitta, the other, and the object of the other consciousness, bhavanga and chuti, is also kati nimitta. But in the death thought process, beginning with what? Panchadvara vajana, right? Yes. Beginning with panchadvara vajana, they take the present visible form as object here. And so jhavanas also take the present visible object as object. So the 5 jhavanas take the present visible object as object, right? Now when the padisandhi consciousness arises, it takes the present visible object taken by the jhavanas in the death thought process. Because, you know, a present visible object must last for 17 thought moments, right? So we begin with bhavanga, atita bhavanga, right? So from atita bhavanga, we go, and 17 thought moments are full at second bhavanga, right? At second bhavanga. So that means the present visible object exists until the second bhavanga. Now, the person has gone to a next life, but the object remains existing. So the padisandhi consciousness of life number 2 takes the present visible object, which was taken by the jhavanas. And at bhavanga 2, the present visible object disappears. So the other bhavangas take that object which has disappeared, or the past visible object. So the object of the death thought process and then padisandhi and 2 bhavangas in the new life is the same, the present visible object. But the object of bhavanga 3, so on until bhavanga 16, is the past visible object. And since the visible object is the object of padisandhi, in life number 2, the bhavangas and chudis will also take that visible object as object. It is the difference is only present and past, but it is his visible object. Now, what is padisandhi? What constitutes padisandhi? Now, padisandhi means padisandhi consciousness, mental factors, and for a human being, 30 particles of matter. You learn them in the 6th chapter. So at the moment of Bodhisandhi, 30 particles of matter along with the Bodhisandhi Chaita and Chaitasika arise. So when we say somebody takes Bodhisandhi or Bodhisandhi arises, we mean this. Bodhisandhi Chaita and the Chaitasika is going along with it, and the 30 particles of matter which are produced by karma. Now, matter, there are 4 causes of matter. So you will learn them in the 6th chapter. Karma, consciousness, weather or climate or temperature, and food. So they are the 4 causes of rupa, 4 causes of matter. So at the moment of Bodhisandhi, the material properties that arise are the result of karma. So what we call rebirth for human beings constitute Chaita, Chaitasika, and Rupa born of karma. These 3. Now, the first thought process in the new life, beginning with Manodwara Vajana, and then 7 Javanas, and then Bhavanga again. Now, they take the new life as object. So the object of the 7, of the first thought process in new life takes that new life, that what we call Bodhisandhi, as object. And then Bhavanga and others take the karma or karma nimitta or gati nimitta as usual. So karma, karma nimitta and gati nimitta in one life is different from those in another life. Although the name of the object is called karma, karma nimitta and gati nimitta, they are different. They are different in their, how do you call it? In their objects, they are different in their essence. For example, say the, no, not in this diagram, say the object of Bodhisandhi in life number 1 is akusala karma. But the object of Bodhisandhi number 2 can be kusala karma. Although they are karma, they are different. The same with the object of Bodhisandhi number 1 may be a sign of karma. But the object of Bodhisandhi number 2 may be sign of karma, other sign of karma, or sign of destiny, or karma. So, karma or karma nimitta or gati nimitta in one life is different from karma or karma nimitta or gati nimitta of another life. So, there is always difference in karma, karma nimitta and gati nimitta in every life. If we can put some colors, it would be better, easier to understand. I put the colors on my sheet and I left it at home. So, if you know the life number 1 and number 2, then you know life number 3, 4, 5, and so on. They go like this. So what is important in this thought process is Bodhisandhi is not the result of duty, that we must understand. Many people fall into this error and they think that Bodhisandhi is produced by chuti. Actually, Bodhisandhi is produced by karma, right? Which karma? Karma in the past, not even karma at five jhavana moments. It is produced by past karma. Past karma means it may be in the long past, or it may be just close past. That means it may be karma acquired before this death thought process. Before this death process arises, there are other thought processes going on and on, like a stream of consciousness, right? So at those times, there is karma. So that karma is also past, not present. So Bodhisandhi is produced by past karma, not produced by chuti. But we can say that Bodhisandhi consciousness is conditioned by chuti. And that condition is proximity. It is called proximity condition. In other words, giving place to. If that consciousness does not disappear, Bodhisandhi consciousness cannot arise. So death consciousness is a condition for Bodhisandhi consciousness to arise. So in that sense, Bodhisandhi consciousness is conditioned by death consciousness. But that is not caused by, but just giving place to. Now, in order for you to sit in this place, I will vacate this place, right? So I am a condition for you to be here. Something like that. So that should be firmly borne in mind, because many people make this error of saying Bodhisandhi is conditioned by or caused by or by chuti-cheta. So chuti-cheta is a vipaka-cheta, right? So as vipaka-cheta, it cannot give result. It is the result of the karma, and so it has no power to give results. But it can be called a condition according to Patthana, because it arises and disappears before the Bodhisandhi cheta arises. So there can be no identical karma or karma nimitta or gati nimitta for all lives or for all existences. So karma nimitta and gati nimitta in one life is different from karma and others for another life. Now, I want you to turn to page 224, about the middle of the page. Let us just read in the paragraph beginning with, in the case of a sense fear, rebirth, clinging, etc. If the object of the rebirth consciousness is a karma, then it is necessarily past and must be a mental object apprehended at the mind door. It is presented through mind door. If the object is a sign of karma, then it can be apprehended at any of the six doors and may be either past or present. Until this, it is okay. In the case of the sign of destiny as object, gati nimitta, different teachers advance conflicting interpretations. Some commentators, including the author of the Vibhavinitika, hold that the sign of destiny is necessarily a present visible form, visible object, apprehended at the mind door. So according to that tika, the sign of destiny is a present visible object, and it is taken through mind door, not through eye door. So you do not see the sign with your eyes. You see the sign with your mind. They interpret Acharya Aniruddha's statement, that means the statement of the manual in the text, as meaning When the object is a sign of karma, it may be perceived at any of the six doors and may be present or past. When it is a sign of destiny, it is perceived at the sixth door, that is the mind door, and is present. Now, in the original Pali, cha dwara gahidan, the word cha dwara gahidan is used. So, this word can be literally, this word means apprehended by or taken by six doors. But it can be interpreted to mean by the sixth door also. So the Vibhavanitika takes it to mean sixth door. So according to Vibhavanitika, the gati nimitta is always present, visible object presented through mind door. Other commentators, including Lady Seattle, reject this interpretation as forced and too narrow. They argue that Acharya Anuruddha must be taken at his word as holding the wider view that the sign of destiny can be past or present and may appear at any of the six doors. So according to these teachers, gati nimitta is the same as kama nimitta. It can be of six kinds of objects, and it can come through six sense doors. Lady Sado asserts that when the Abhidhamma texts commonly speak of the sign of destiny as a present visible object appearing at the mind door, this is said by way of its usual manifestation, but does not mean that it does not become manifest in other ways, for example, as the groans of those in hell or as celestial music or fragrance, etc. So, gati nimitta may be not visible object only. It can be audible object or it can be smell and so on. Now, there is a story of Dhammika Upasaka in Dhammapada. So when he was about to die, then the sign of destiny appeared to him. And that sign of destiny was the chariot from six Devalokas, asking them to get into their respective chariots. Say, please step into our chariot, we will take us to our realm, like that. So he saw those signs. And he also hears, because those devas are inviting him to step into their own chariots. So their gati nimitta is not only visible object, and audible object is also gati nimitta. And he may have smell of celestial flowers and so on. I don't know that. So the other commentators, including Lady Sero, take that gati nimitta can be not only visible object, but also object, and it is presented through any of the six sense doors. Okay. In Abhidhamma, or in the teachings of the Buddha, there is no transferring of anything from one life to another life. Now, the Padisandhicitta arises, right? And that arises as a result of the karma in the past. And it is not something carried over to the next life. This is what Abhidhamma teaches. So there are similes to explain this, right? The simile of an echo, the simile of a lamp, and the simile of a seal. And that means Padisandhicitta arises not without cause. But Padisandhicitta is not the cause. It is the result of the cause. So when you shout into a cave, then the echo comes back. The echo is not your voice, but without your voice, there can be no echo. So in the same way, Patisandhi is not, it does not belong to the past life, but it comes into being because of something in the past. So it comes into being out of nothing. Now, it does not come into being out of nothing. And the same as the oil lamp. So you light your lamp from another lamp. So the flame you get is not the same flame as the other one. But that flame comes into being not without the flame in the old lamp. And also the seal. So when you put a seal on the paper, then there is an impression of seal there. So that impression is not the seal. Not the seal transferred to the paper. But without that seal, there can be no impression. So in the same way, what arises in the new life is not totally disconnected with something in the past life. But not any one of the past life is carried over to next life. So that is how we explain this. So whatever arises at the moment of Patisandhi is, according to this teaching, the result of the karma in the past. Not something taken over to a new life. But there is a kind of continuity going on, and so in conventional terms we say a person is reborn. Even we say the bodhisattva is reborn as a king, a bodhisattva is reborn as an animal, and so on. But actually, there is no bodhisattva reborn as a human being or as a deva or as an animal, because nothing from the past life is taken over to the next life. But something in the past life causes something in the new life to arise. And since it is the result of the cause, it may possess some qualities of the cause. Not that the qualities are taken over, transferred to the next life, but the result themselves, like, say, when you grow a mango tree, then you get the mango fruit. So in the same way, the result in the next life is similar to the cause in the past life. So this is how we should understand this life and next life. Okay. Now, you may have many questions.